killing of Hussein, for the martyrdom of Hussein, in the hearts of the believer that will never be cooled down. This is the narration.
It's
of
like a fire for our emotions,
exactly.
And we remember him each year.
Mm-hmm. So we need 10 days to get prepared for the day of Ashura. And the last point that I would like to share is that, alhamdulillah, we see that we have a culture among the Shia communities that in these 10 days of Muharram, every day they dedicate that day to one of the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam or family members. For example, one day they talk about Hurr ibn Yazid ibn Riyahi and the concept of Tawbah, for example. Another day is for Ali ibn al-Asghar, Qasim ibn al-Hassan, Ali ibn al-Akbar.
It's different segments with different wisdom and philosophies and lessons.
Exactly. So 10 days is a great opportunity for the Muslims, especially the Shias, to know about different people. And some of them, they had different approaches. I mean, Zuhair ibn al-Qayn is a companion of Imam Hussein alayhi salam with that background, and now he's the companion of Imam. His story is mentioned in these 10 days, the story of Hurr ibn Yazid ibn Riyahi, who was about to go to the hellfire, but he became one of the martyrs on the day of Ashura.
And of course, these aren't just stories, they all have morals and lessons for
us. Qasim ibn al-Hassan is a role model for maybe teenagers nowadays, so, and Ali ibn al-Akbar for the youth, Abbas, and so on and so forth. So again, 10 days is a good opportunity at least for us to come to know some of the greatest companions and family members of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. If we were supposed to only mourn for one day, for sure we didn't have enough time to learn about all these stories, all these different personalities, which are for sure the best role models for our today's life.
Also, one might add that this Muharram, or these 10 days of Muharram, are also a gathering in themselves, comparable to maybe the month of Ramadan, where Muslims come together, they go to the mosque more often. Same thing, same concept with Muharram, we gather more, and what better use than to give us lectures and lessons in these times?
And interestingly, it's been mentioned that at least in Shia countries and communities where these, sessions are held during the month of Muharram and the holy month of Ramadan, the rate of the crimes and sins are reduced, very considerably.
Well, there you go.
Which is another sign for the effect of these sessions.
And just another point I might add to some who might question, well, why do you mourn 10 days for one person? Like, maybe 3 days are enough, maybe 5 days are enough. And to those who have this question, I will myself give them a question. If a beloved or dear one to you happened to pass away, maybe in an uncle, how much would you be mourning for him? You cannot just say, I will be mourning for 3 days and then I will call it quits. At least a month, and you will remember him every single year. And that is just an uncle. Well, what about a father or a mother or a brother or a son? And it just escalates. Well, then what about an imam?
And then
even
the
more
way that he has passed away. Sometimes when your father passed away through a natural death, you may remember him for a couple of months. But sometimes he is brutally killed.
Right.
So any time, any year that you remember the way that he was martyred, for sure you will cry for him. So the way that that tragedy happened is also very important.
Like, I know people who've lost their mothers and they're like 40, 50 years, they are still grieving.
Yeah.
It's been years. They still have their pictures up in their houses and all kind of stuff. And on that sobering note, I must unfortunately end today's program, dear Sheikh. I thank you for your time, and I thank our dear listeners for tuning in. This has been your host, Musa Al-Bahadili, coming to you from your program, Q&A on Islamic Beliefs, broadcasting to you from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي حسين وحسن حب آل البيت فاضل
the light.
We don't know much about woolly mammoths that went extinct some 10,000 years ago, except their scant references in archaeology books. Now, scientists have discovered that the giant mammals could walk incredibly long distances. Scientists from the University of Alaska have concluded that a male mammoth named Kik covered enough ground on its 28-year lifespan to encircle the Earth twice. That's a lot. To come up with the data, paleontologists analyzed one of Kik's well-preserved tusks. They say the animal lived with a herd through its infancy and youth, and then went on to live alone. Scientists hope they will learn more about mammoths by analyzing further data from Kik's remains.
After an epic 17-month journey that drew international attention, China's famous herd of wandering elephants has finally returned home. Wildlife protection officials said the elephants safely crossed a bridge over the Yuan River to reach their protected habitat. The Asian elephants also received a little encouragement from wildlife rangers to help them get home. Staff used corn trails as bait and built artificial roads to ensure the herd took the right route. The 1,300-kilometer odyssey that began in March captivated audiences with several highlights. One of the highlights was the birth of a calf in November. In June, drone footage was captured of the 14-member herd as they were sleeping outside of a village. In Indonesia, a group of university lecturers have come up with an idea of building a robot to help people during the coronavirus pandemic. The robot is assembled from electric household items like pots and pans and an old television monitor. It was named Delta after the new coronavirus variant ripped through Indonesia. The robot was initially built to entertain residents of a village in the country's East Java province. But the head of the robot-making project says he decided to shift his function into assisting people dealing with a deadly virus.
With this new Delta variant and the surging number of COVID-19 cases, I decided to turn the robot used for public services into one that sprays disinfectant and delivers food and necessities of residents who are self-isolating. I'm shifting the function to serve only the members of the community who are in need.
The interesting thing about a robot is that it greets people when delivering things to isolated residents. The developers of the robot say it has been built in a joint project with local people and is by no means a high-tech device. The world's oldest wooden boat belonging to Egyptian pharaoh King Khufu has been moved to its new home in a painstaking transfer process. It took 48 hours to move the 20-ton vessel to the Grand Egyptian Museum from the Giza Pyramids. It was carefully fixed inside a metal cage and carried on a remote-controlled vehicle. The 4,600-year-old vessel, also known as Solar Boat, was not built to sail through seas. In ancient Egypt, pharaohs commissioned solar boats, which were essentially virtual vessels, to transport them to the afterlife. To fulfill their purpose, they were buried in pits next to royal burial chambers. Prehistoric cave paintings found in Spain proved that Neanderthals were the first artists on Earth. A new study says red markings discovered in three caves near Malaga did not occur naturally. They were made by Neanderthals nearly 65,000 years ago. That's when modern humans did not inhabit the continent yet. The findings suggest that the pigments were applied at different times, sometimes more than 10,000 years apart. This shows that Neanderthals returned to the site over time to make symbolic markings.
I believe that this art made by the Neanderthals will be also found in other caves around the world. This non-figurative art, which we have not paid attention to, may be precisely the oldest art in the world. So this place in Spain is one of the caves with the oldest art in the world.
Researchers say the pigments are yet another evidence that the intellectual capabilities of Neanderthals have been underestimated. Neanderthals went extinct about 40,000 years ago.
Egypt's forgotten art of Fatik is undergoing a revival thanks to a designer who has been working hard to bring the ancient cloth decorating technique to life. Working tirelessly in a small workshop in Old Cairo, Samer Hassanyan has enhanced the art of batik over the years. Samer is one of the few designers in Egypt to use the traditional method to design on fabrics. The art consists of patterns created by applying melted wax onto cloth before dipping it in dye or painting over it with a brush. The fabric is put into boiling water in order to melt the wax. The ancient Egyptians used the batik fabric mostly to wrap the coffins and mummies. However, the difficulty of mastering the art caused its disappearance.
Batik has disappeared in Egypt because no one shared their skill. As a teacher, I find that it is very important to provide as much training as I can because people realize how difficult it is when they start learning the techniques.
Samer has now skillful artists in her workshop who design colorful fabric using the technique. Samer says her goal is to produce unique designs that are particularly identified as to Egyptian and represent the country's rich cultural heritage.
Artists in an Egyptian village work hard to keep alive the ancient tradition of making papyrus paper despite the tourist downturn amid the coronavirus pandemic. The village of Karamus in northeastern Cairo is the largest hub of papyrus production in the country. Many of the residents of the village are involved in farming, processing, and decorating papyrus planted in 25 farms near the village. The Pharaonic era tradition includes cutting strips from the plant, pressing them together, and drying them to form a sheet. The artists then decorate the papyrus to create beautiful products for tourists. However, the industry has been affected by the coronavirus pandemic, forcing the artists to use more creativity.
We are trying to think out of the box to keep this profession alive. We made products out of papyrus paper, like wallets, notebooks, drawing sketches, new products, so we can keep going.
The artists have also launched online stores to sell their new products. Papyrus producers say they have lost nearly 80% of their income in the last 2 years. However, they say they will never stop making papyrus and will make every effort to keep the ancient cultural tradition alive.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
You can find tin boxes in every house, with people often throwing them away after consuming what they had inside. But an old lady in Belgium has turned it into an obsession for years to fill her home with these fascinating containers. 83-year-old Madame Dardenne has gathered around 60,000 vintage tin boxes in a span of 30 years. The empty containers of all sizes now occupy four other houses. They once used to hold all kinds of goods, ranging from coffee, biscuits, tobacco, tea and soap to shoe polish, are now piled high all over the building that belongs to Dardenne. Some of these boxes, according to her, come from as far as India and Japan. Dardenne says it all started with a chocolate box that was given to her with a painting of a blonde girl in a blue hat.
I consider this box to be the first of my collection. It is a box of Belgian Côte d'Or chocolates that a relative of my husband gave me, believing that I was interested in boxes.
She sees the boxes as history books with decorations and writings on them describing major events and reflecting contemporary culture. The collection is the largest in the world, listed by the Guinness Book of Records. Located in eastern Belgium, the museum can be visited by appointment. Humans have damaged the environment perhaps more than any other species, but there are always some who go out of their way to help animals in distress. Juan Carlos Rodriguez and his wife run a sloth rescue center in the lush outskirts of the Venezuelan capital, Caracas. They have so far saved over 45 sloths. The couple decided to start helping the furry mammals last year after running into a sloth that had been badly injured. They saved him and called him Chewy, after a character in the popular Star Wars franchise. Juan and his wife are now alone in their life-saving journey. Are not alone in their life-saving journey, as their vet friends also help them with services and donations. The coronavirus pandemic has disrupted lives all around the world, but it's important to try to stay fit for humans and animals alike. Penguins in an open zoo in Thailand have been keeping their daily routines, although no visitors are allowed due to COVID-19 restrictions. They are regularly taken out of their air-conditioned enclosure so they can enjoy a walk or swim. The 41 flightless birds consume nearly 25 kilograms of fresh fish each day. The cute animals at the zoo are aged from 1 month to 18 years old.
South Korean medical workers manning drive-through coronavirus testing centers have a new way to cool off and rest amid hot summer days, recovery buses. The medical workers are now able to enjoy their breaks at these buses, which are equipped with air conditioning, cold water, and snacks. The workers are allowed to take off their protective suits that trap heat and create an environment difficult to tolerate. Some of the buses also have shower booths and bunk beds to help the medical workers deal with their hard work. They say the buses are refreshing.
I almost feel like I'm stuck in a heat dome, like in a car with the air conditioner off in the middle of summer. It's so hot that it's even hard to breathe. But when I come here during the break time and rest in a much cooler and more pleasant environment like an igloo, I can recharge and work cheerfully in the afternoon.
These buses were first designed and used as resting places for Korean police officers and firefighters. Now, 22 of them are deployed to testing centers across the country. The government is considering deploying more recovery buses amid rising temperature and a new wave of coronavirus infections.
An aquarium in the French capital, Paris, is celebrating the birth of a baby black-tip shark. The female shark is 55 centimeters long and weighs 560 grams. She's currently quarantined in a small pond so she wouldn't come under attack by adult sharks. Officials at the aquarium say she'll be ready to swim amongst other sharks in 3 to 4 months. She was born last week at the aquarium, an event the caretakers say is very rare.
It's a rare event for us, which hadn't happened here for the past 5 years. The birth is quite rare in aquariums and in captivity in general. In fact, there are often embryos that won't survive, or they're sometimes stillborn. That's what makes it a rare event, which also occurs at night. We had the chance to observe it during the day, which allowed us to intervene very quickly, and were able to recover the little one.
The International Union for the Conservation of Nature has designated black-tip sharks as a vulnerable species. It's particularly poached in some countries for their distinctive fins. The marvelous creatures have a torpedo-shaped body and often spin out of water while eating. They have specialized cells in their snouts that detect the electric current of nearby prey.
Cats are notoriously volatile animals, as we all know. One moment they are purring for your attention, and the next they can't stand being touched. Now, a Canadian firm has come up with an app that can help you better understand your feline friends. The app is called Tabby and works with artificial intelligence. The AI's algorithm was trained at a clinic in the city of Calgary. The developers of Tabby hope their product can be useful for novice cat owners and vets alike. The app can also help monitor the health of cats. Tabby's developer explains how the app functions.
It uses artificial intelligence, so specifically machine learning, and it's coupled with the feline grimace scale. And what the feline grimace scale is, it's a way for humans to be able to determine if a cat is in pain or not based on the ear positioning, the eye positioning, the muzzle, whiskers, things like that. And so we were able to train a machine using machine learning and a series of images to be able to make that determination. So if you're somebody who has a cat but you don't have that training, you can just use the app and it can help you determine how your cat is doing.
Sounds very useful, but Tabby is not perfect though and runs into problems when trying to decipher the mood of black cats. Despite the hiccups, the developers say the program will get better at doing its task as its artificial intelligence develops through practice.
You're listening to Hosseinia from IRIB English Radio by Sayyid Abbas Rezavian. لبيك يا حسين.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله الحسين. Brothers and sisters, my condolences for the time period of Muharram and Ashura and for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Welcome to the program Husseiniyya. Ziyarat Ashura is a great gift to us from Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. In this ziyarat, we learn many things. The first thing that we mentioned was that we learn about bala and calamity, that life has difficulties and challenges for us, and that we learn from Imam Hussein alayhi salam how to deal with our bala, and we understand that the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was to endeavor the bala that God had brought for him, the trial that Allah had brought for him, and that he persevered and that he amazed the angels with his patience. Today we're going to talk about another aspect of Ziyarat Ashura, and we read from the Ziyarat that we beseech God and we ask him, أَنْ يُعْطِيَنِي بِمُصَابِي بِكُمْ, to recompense me with my misfortunes for you. We ask Allah to give us recompense because we have made the bala of Imam Hussein our bala. أَفْضَلَ مَا يُعْطِي مُصَابًا بِمُصِيبَتِهِ, the highest that he, God, gives as compensation for misfortunes that has afflicted anyone. Brothers and sisters, when misfortunes happen on somebody, God gives them the reward. But here in Ziyarat Ashura, we are asking Allah to give us the best reward that you give a musab, a person that affliction has happened to him. As if we take the bala of Imam Hussein and we are making it our own bala, we're making it our own calamity. Therefore, we are learning from Ziyarat Ashura to have huzn, to have grief, to have sorrow in this Muharram. And this is an attribute of the faithful. This is the attribute of the sincere. Then this Muharram, they are truly grieving for Imam Hussein. They are truly sad for Imam Hussein. This is the second step. So the first step was bala and understanding the calamity of Ashura. The second thing is now grieving. Now that you know it is the worst bala that happened upon anybody, and it is the bala that the angels understand, it is the bala of the Ahlul Islam, the people of Islam, we now understand that we should grieve, we should become sad for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that we should shed tears for him. If we look at the narrations, we understand that all the prophets cried for Imam Hussein. Even Adam, when he understood about what happened to Imam Hussein, he began to cry. One of the stories I'd like to share to you with you today is the story of Prophet Zakaria. Prophet Zakaria was taught the names, the Al-Asma. What are the names? Prophet Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Hassan, and Hussein. He was taught these names. This narration is in the book of Ihtijaj, Al-Ihtijaj of Sheikh Tabarsi. When he learned these names, the name of Imam Hussein was taught to him. It says in the narration that it says, إِذَا ذَكَرْتُ الْحُسَيْنِ تَدْمَعُ عَيْنِي. When I hear this name, Allah, you have taught me the name of Hussein, I begin to cry. And then he learns the story of Karbala. What happens to Prophet Zakaria when he learns about Imam Hussein? What will happen to him? It says, فَلَمَّا سَمِعَ ذَلِكَ زَكَرِيَا لَمْ يُفَارِقْ مَسْجِدَهُ ثَلَاثَةَ أَيَّامٍ. 3 days he kept himself in the masjid. وَمَّنَعَ فِيهِنَّ النَّاسِ مِنْ دُخُولَ عَلَيْهِ. He didn't allow anybody to enter. وَأَقْبَلَ عَلَى الْبُكَاءِ. And he began to cry and cry and cry. Prophet Zakaria, knowing that what happened to Imam Hussein. His brothers and sisters, the reality of Ashura can only be witnessed by the prophets and their successors. They truly know what happened to Imam Hussein. They can truly understand the batin and the essence of Karbala. So what did Prophet Zakaria do dua for? He wanted reward. We say, give us some of the reward of the musab, of those that have been afflicted. Give us some of this reward. He wanted the reward of calamity, of huzn, of patience. So he did a very special dua. He says in this narration, Elahi, Urzuqni walada, God grant me a son that I love, a son that I like, and then take away that son for me, so that I can in the same way have the affliction of the noble messenger of Allah, that he knows that his son, because in the traditions the Prophet talked about Imam Hussein as his son, even though it is his grandson, that when Allah took away and put bala in Imam Hussein and martyred Imam Hussein, that is the bala of the Holy Prophet. So in the same way, give me a son so I can share that bala of the Holy Prophet, knowing that his grandson, knowing that his son will be martyred. And Allah gave him Yahya, and Yahya was martyred and is very similar in story and very similar to Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Standing here alone, so far from home, a place where angels cry, while innocent children die. Hussein has said goodbye, praying some of them survive the torture and the heat. They can't bear to watch him leave. They cry out, Hussein, ya Hussein.
We were talking about huzn. We're talking about grief. And we shared the story of Prophet Zachariah and the book of Al-Ihtijaj. And we said that Prophet Zachariah, knowing what befell Imam, what would befall Imam Hussein, that he began to cry for 3 days. And he did a very special dua that he could share in some of the huzn of Karbala. Having grief itself is not something good. In the traditions we have, it's something discouraged. It's not good to be sad. But when you have grief for Imam Hussein, that is not grief. It is actually connection to God. It is actually spiritual enjoyment. That is the difference between having grief for Imam Hussein, having sorrow for Imam Hussein, and having sorrow for your own worldly affairs. Look at some of the traditions we have. From Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, we have the tradition in Al-Kafi that Nafasul Mahmum Lana Al-Muqtam Lidhulmina Tasbih. The breath of one who is saddened in our account is grieved for the oppression done to us is tasbih, is glorification. Just as you say, Subhanallah, you are this breath that you're taking because you understand how sad the event of Ashura is. It is tasbih for you. It is glorification of Allah. وَحَمُّهُ لِأَمْرِنَا عِبَادَةً. The grief for our cause is worship. So the sad breath is tasbih, is glorification of God. And the grief that happens, the hum that happens, is actually in the tradition worship of God. Therefore, this grief is much different than other types of grief. This is worship. This is connection to God. This is something that's very worthy, very precious. Look at it, all the traditions we have about the tears that somebody sheds for Imam Hussein, what reward they'll get. Look at the traditions that we have, those that recite poetry for Imam Hussein, what reward they'll get. Those that have majlis for Imam Hussein, look at the reward they'll get. So having grief is the second part of our spiritual journey for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And of course, Imam Hussein does not need our tears. Imam Hussein, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, as you read in Ziyad Jami Kabira, ذَلَّ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ لَكُمْ. Everything is humble for the Ahlul Bayt. They do not need our tears. We need to cry for Imam Hussein. We need to cry so that we can link our hearts closer to Imam Hussein. When a person's heart gets attached to another person, they spontaneously become good. They spontaneously become like that person. That is one of the best ways for us to change ourselves and benefit from Ashura, to become more like Imam Hussein, is to link our hearts with Imam Hussein, to grieve like Imam Hussein, to have sorrow like Imam Hussein alayhi salam had sorrow. As we read in Ziyarat Ashura, we read, Alhamdulillahi ala azim raziyati, at the end. Allah, praise be, all praise be to Allah for my great misfortune. May Allah, I thank God, Alhamdulillah, I say, for this great raziyah, this great misfortune. So in this Ashura, in this Muharram, if you feel grief for Imam Hussein, if you feel saddened by the event of Karbala, know that this is a blessing for you. Know that this is worship. Know that this is tasbih. Know that this is the second step in the spiritual journey of reaching Maqam al-Mahmud, reaching the praiseworthy station. And we thank Allah for these tears. We thank Allah that He gave us the ability to mourn for Imam Hussein.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the VIRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com www.bookshop.com/en.
Into the Holy Quran.
And I thank you, Allah. I thank you, Allah. I thank you, Allah. I thank you, Allah.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we are trying to talk about the different verses of the Holy Quran, which are thematically connected to our topic, which is Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. So stay with us, and let's listen to some of the verses.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. And abide in your houses, and do not display yourselves as was the display of the former times of ignorance. And establish prayer, and give zakah, and obey Allah and His Messenger. Allah intends only to remove from you the impurity of sin, O people of the Prophet's household, and to purify you with extensive purification.
Brothers and sisters, in this program, we'll have another approach towards the recognition of Imam Hussein and actually all of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. We all know that Almighty Allah's attributes are not merely verbal. I mean, they're mostly objective, and they have external realizations. The first attributes that manifested themselves from the invisible God at His will are four, according to a narration, and seven, according to others. Of course, they all can refer to the same one name, but the first attributes are the ever-living, all-knowing, all-powerful, and the speaker. Each of these attributes has a domain and property for itself, and there is a longing in them for manifestation. This is what I mean by having objective and external realization. Since Allah is comprehensive of all the attributes, it generally holds other attributes and somehow does not allow an attribute to emerge alone. Now, in the previous program, we said that the universe actually needs these divine men, these Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam.
each part of the universe that was materialized with Almighty Allah's most excellent names is governed by that attribute. So, it is necessary that someone comes into existence to be a full manifestation of Almighty Allah's chief name and create a balance among the concrete names of Allah, so they will not interfere with each other. In other words, the universe is in need of a perfect man who is the manifestation of all most excellent names as well as the chief name, so as to be able to administer all the affairs as Almighty Allah's vicegerent with his permission. Even angels, who are abstract beings and cannot be seen, and each of them is assigned with a special duty, are in need of Almighty Allah's vicegerent. This vicegerent and Khalifatullah must be there to control them in their affairs and teach them what is necessary and what is not.
O people, compete with each other in attaining noble traits, and hasten to acquire lofty benefits, and do not count those good deeds which you have delayed.
Now, of course, this reasoning was rather long. Let me sum it up for you. Based on Quranic verses and narrations, the universe is in need of a khalifa, a khalifatullah, a vicegerent. And this need is constant. I mean, even if no human beings had been created, the universe was still in need of a khalifatullah. The first human being of our kind, Adam, was also in need of a khalifa. He needed that vicegerent so that his affairs would be administered justly. But because no one else was created, he himself was Khalifatullah, in order for that position to be a link between him and Allah. Now, based on this imperative need, Allah has chosen a vicegerent for himself and made him rule over universe. قَالَ إِنِّي جَاعِلٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ خَلِيفَةً. The Almighty Allah said, I am going to place in the earth a Khalifa, a vicegerent. Now, this Khalifa would rule the highest stages of the universe. Although the earth is the lowliest of the low, potentially this position is the highest in terms of ranks on the earth. That's why we can claim that the enemies who stood against Imam Hussein alayhi salam were committing the worst wrongdoing. They were standing against the only human being on earth as the vicegerent. He had the highest ranks on the earth. This is the man that can collect within himself all attributes of Allah and become the most active element of universe thanks to its mere passiveness. That's why the Holy Quran says, وَعَلَّمَ آدَمَ الْأَسْمَاءَ كُلَّهَا. He taught Adam all of the names. Adam being taught all these names means he was the manifestation of all the names of the Almighty. Dear listeners, we will inshallah talk about the different features of Almighty Allah's vicegerents in the next programs. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
سمعتي عليك ظلت تنزل جروح يا ابو اليمة بمصابك ذابت الروح طلب راي توفقني بخدمتك ولا تحرمني من الدمع والنور يا ابو النعمة وباب للرحمة أدري توفيقي هو أسبابه إلك أسأل وانت تتفضل من توظفني خادم ببابه
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa
I invite you to listen to a short part of the book Sirr al-Salat, The Secret of Prayer, written by Imam Khomeini, seeking refuge from Satan and its managements and manifestations to the stage of Allah's name, who is the creator of the perfect man, namely the Salik's stage, the true believer's stage. His real objective is to attain essential perfection and happiness. But there is a Satan with the snare of his snares to prevent him from reaching his objective. The Salik will have to take refuge to Allah from that Satan and his evil and tricks. Thus, as long as the Salik is still within the frame of the soul and the evil of nature, the aim of his journey is to attain self-perfections and his recitation is through the eyeness and selfish tongue, which is the Satan elaborate tongue, and whatever the Salik utters is not the God's name. And when Salik exists out from these branches and finds himself free from such domination and observes the Allah's manifestations within the existing creation, he will achieve the first stage of seeking refuge from Satan and its managements and manifestations to the stage of Allah's name.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode of Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Ayman Rizvi. Imam Khomeini, peace and blessings on his soul, has said, Islamic revolution of Iran is a reflection of Ashura and the great divine revolution. If we pay attention to the history, we will find out that Ashura has really given power and energy to the revolution of Iran. We have the Pahlavi dynasty here in Iran, which is oppressing our rights. So what we have to do right now is the same phenomena. What we have to do is we have to resist, even when we are small in numbers. But what is important is our immense faith, the same kind of a faith Imam Hussein had in Karbala.
Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum
One more important thing here is since we are shedding tears for martyrs. That is fine, that is tantamount to keep the momentum alive. But we must know that shedding these tears or making ourselves weep or making others weep is not something smaller in value. It is something great because it is creating the energy and it is creating this sense of resistance so that we can have a movement and uprising that was initiated by Imam Hussein at Karbala, and our nation can also take the lesson from it. So this is the main lesson I think we can get from Karbala, that we should shed our tears, but with the complete understanding of fighting for justice and fighting against the oppression of the times of Karbala. Till the next episode, inshallah, we'll see you. Fi amanillah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, please accept our condolences on these days of Muharram, which are the days of sorrow for the Ahlul Bayt. Peace be upon them. Now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
My dear brothers and sisters in Iman, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. A'adham Allahu ujurana wa ujurakum bi musabina bi Abi Abdillah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam. May Allah give each and every one of us the greatest of rewards for commemorating the supreme sacrifice and for remembering the greatest tragedy to ever befall humanity, and that is the tragedy of Karbala, the tragedy which befell Abu Abdillah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam and his family and friends on the 10th of Muharram in the year 61 after the Hijrah. I want to talk about a man in the next few moments as I conclude who truly got the maghfirah of Allah, subhanallah. He truly attained the ridwan of Allah, the pleasure of Allah. He was a man that you and I know very well, a man named Hur ibn Yazid al-Riyahi. Hur, the free man, as his name is, as his mother called him, Hur. Hur, as we know, was a commander in the forces that blocked Imam Hussein on the 3rd of Muharram when Abu Abdillah alayhi salam reached to this desert called Nainawa, or it was called Taf, or it was finally told it was called Karbala. Hur reached there with his thousands of soldiers on the same day as Abu Abdillah al-Hussein alayhi salam. He blocked his way. He wouldn't let him move forward towards Kufa. He wouldn't let him change and turn back to Medina. He wouldn't let him take a step forward. The same Hur that we remember tonight was the same one who blocked Imam Hussein's way. But on that third day of Muharram, when Hur was ready to pray his salat, Imam Hussein asked him, "Do you want to lead or do you want to pray behind me?" And subhanAllah, Hur says, "No, you are the master. You are the grandson of Rasulullah. You lead the prayers and we will pray behind you." This is the same Abu Abdillah who gave the animals that were within the cavalry of Hur of the water, as he gave the soldiers of the army of, or the battalion of Hur of the water they needed to quench their thirst on the third of Muharram. Brothers and sisters, the same whore was the one who on the night of Ashura, when Abu Abdullah alayhi salam had dug a trench and had a trench dug around the camp, and they lit a fire around that trench to protect them on this night of Ashura. The cursed Umar ibn As'ad, Mal'un, he saw the fire being lit, and Hur was in the vicinity of Umar ibn As'ad, the cursed Umar ibn As'ad, and Umar yells out to Abu Abdullah that you light a fire today, are you preparing for yourself to go into the fire of hell? And Hur, hearing these words, probably thinking to himself that this is the son of the daughter of Rasulullah, how can he go into the fire of hell? What are we doing? Are we not destined for hell? Brothers and sisters, it was probably on that night that that spark of revolution continued to develop within the heart of Hur, this free man who on the day of Ashura, when Umar ibn As'ad again begins to plan the day of Ashura out, of what he's going to do, we know that on the day of Ashura, Abu Abdullah lets out a call asking if there's anybody there to help, if there's anybody there to answer his call. And Umar ibn As'ad is there, and the man, Hur, is there. And Hur turns to Umar ibn As'ad and he says, are you going to actually fight against this man? Are you going to attack this individual? And Umar ibn As'ad says to Hur, he says, the least of what I will do today, the least of what we will do this afternoon is for hands to be severed and for heads to be cut off of the bodies. Yes, we will do all that we have to do to bring this man to submission. It was at this point, after Hur hears these words, my brothers and sisters, that he says to himself that I was wavering between two states of heaven and hell. On one side, there is hell if I follow my commander Umar ibn As'ad. On the other side is heaven if I follow Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. And he says, by God, I swear that I would rather be burnt. I would have my body burnt. I would have my body burnt by the fire and make it to heaven rather than follow these individuals and make my way to hell. It's at this point that we're told that Hur begins to get ready. He mounts upon his horse. He has his spear in his hand pointed down to the ground. With his head bowed in utter humility and humbleness and submission, he makes his way towards the camp of Abu Abdullah. He reaches to the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He meets the Imam. He asks Abu Abdullah, he says, O Imam, he says, I am the one who have prevented you from moving forward. I'm the one who have got you into this situation right now. I'm feeling so bad. I hear the cries of the children. He says, is there any way for me to make tawbah? Is there any way for me to ask remorse? Brothers and sisters, Abu Abdullah, the one who is the grandson of Rahmatulil Alameen, he says to Hur, he says, O Hur, he says, if you turn back to Allah, then Allah will turn back to you. If you ask Allah for forgiveness for all that you have done, Allah will accept your forgiveness. Hur makes these words. He asks Abu Abdullah to forgive him. He asks Allah to forgive him. And on that day of Ashura, he begins first by asking Abu Abdullah for the permission to address the enemy troops. Abu Abdullah gives him the permission. He yells out to Umar ibn As'ad. He yells out to Shimr. He yells out to his fellow people whom he was a part of in the army. He says that, will you stand there and deprive the son of the daughter of Rasulullah of a drop of water? He says the Jews and the Christians and the Zoroastrians are drinking from the same water of the Alkama. He says the dogs and the pigs are drinking from the water, but yet you won't give the son of the daughter of Rasulullah even a drop of water to drink. At this point, out of feeling the grief and remorse, he asks Abu Abdullah for the permission to go to the battlefield. Imam gives him the permission. He goes and he attacks his former friends, his former colleagues. Historians and books of Maqtal mention that Hur goes and kills many of the individuals. However, unfortunately, as it has been a long day for Hur, for many of the people involved in this tragedy, and the enemy forces are way too many in number, Hur is attacked. Hur falls off of his horse. And as Hur is laying on the ground, he lets out that last call to Abu Abdullah.